a prison classroom begins at a level that privileged kids at an elite university can't even reach. So, yes, I think that they are well aware, especially by the time I get those students. These are really scholars. They've turned their cells into libraries, what Gramsci calls these organic intellectuals. They are acutely aware of how the so best educated have not a clue about, and you and I both spent time at Harvard, and I think we would affirm that.
Absolutely. I want to end, not intentionally on a positive note, but nonetheless, you talk about in the book a transformation, and clearly reading between your lines, you had the feeling that a transformation, even under those circumstances, even for people who have suffered so much, was possible. Does that give you some hope, Chris, that outside of prison, where we are all prisoners of a system, even if we're not incarcerated, that that transformation also is possible and that the prisoners may give us a clue about how to achieve it?
Yes, but we have to be clear that what I was teaching was not mass culture. It was art. It was August Wilson. It was Amira Baraka. It was Miguel Pinero. It was John Herbert. And these were all playwrights who dealt with, you know, the deepest subterranean issues of human existence, and in most cases, in several cases, what it means to be in prison. And so when we dig deep within ourselves and face our own demons, as August Wilson said, then we can finally find our song, find who it is we are. Because for these people, the narrative that they have been fed throughout their lives ignores and attempts to erase their own history. And it was a recovering of the self, I think, that I found so powerful. And that's why I use the word transformation.
Chris, as always, I'm sorry that our time has gone so quickly, but I want to recommend to everyone a book that will move you as well as teach you. Thank you for writing it. And I look forward to the next time we can have a conversation together. And to my audience, thank you so much for paying attention. I think the reward here is obvious, and I look forward to speaking with you again next week.
This is Ralph Pointer. Join me and others every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial. It would appear the human movement is such that at any moment in history, there are too few that understand possibilities of existence that would benefit all who inhabit this planet and are willing to act on this understanding. This program will feature that few. What are your views on these issues that impact your life today? What are your views on America today? What are your views on America's future? Can we talk? Call in 212-209-2877. Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial.
And the previous program was Economic Update, which is heard Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. right after the WBAI Evening News. And this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for Off the Hook. Coming up, it is 7 p.m.
And a very good evening to everybody. It's 7 p.m. You're listening to WBAI New York. It's time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Only you bomb for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. Monday, you know. Ha!
very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello.
And out there in Skype land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
Good evening.
Alex, look at you. All countryed out there. You got a hunter cap on. You've got your flannel shirt. Looks like you just hunted a raccoon or something. What is that?
Splitting wood.
Yeah, it's you look really cozy in there. You've got a cup of something. And
I have an espresso. And to be clear, this isn't a Mossy Oak hat. I don't want people to get the wrong impression of me. This is a Marpat camo pattern, army field hat. So. But I've been outside stacking wood. It's cold out here. There's snow on the ground. The lake is frozen. It's starting to feel a hell of a lot like winter.
Wait, is the lake really frozen?
It is.
Because it's like 40 degrees in New York. Is it really that much colder one state over or two states over?
Yeah, but also I'm about 2,000 feet above you as well. So I'm in the mountains, so it's quite a bit colder here.
Okay.
So it's been freezing, or rather below freezing for just about the last week. And the last time I actually went out on the lake for a nice kayak here was the night of Thanksgiving. And then the next day it started to freeze over. So it seems like the lake will be frozen here probably until March. And it's kind of sad.
Is it really wise to go out on a kayak when the water is almost frozen?
Probably not.
Yeah,
absolutely. In fact, I had to tear through a little bit of ice, but the sunset was absolutely beautiful. It was definitely worth the risk to get out on the lake one last time. And by the way, I hope everybody had a happy Thanksgiving.
I hope so, too. We are on the air tonight. We are not on the air next week. So this week we're doing overtime at 8 o'clock, and we look forward to hearing from our listeners who we have not heard from in a while. Please write down the phone number. It's 802-321-4225. Don't call it now because nobody will pick up. But at 8 o'clock, we will have a broadcast that goes over the Internet, and you can share your thoughts, experiences, and comments with us at that point in time. I'm not sure if people saw this. There was a tweet just came down from 2600 Central, which has to do with Hotel Pennsylvania and the region. Some kind of webinar that's happening right now, because everything always happens Wednesday at 7 p.m. I don't know why that is, but this, the topic, I don't really know what this is, to be honest. The topic is Empire State Coalition, demolishing our cities doesn't make them better. Civic groups in the Empire State Coalition and guest speakers will respond to the imminent demise of the Hotel Pennsylvania and other noteworthy buildings, as well as Governor Hochul and the Empire State Development Corporation's continued support for the construction of an anti-urban, uber-dense Hudson Yards East, the self-proclaimed Vornado campus at Penn Station. Now, I can't give the link to this out over the radio because it would take me about 20 minutes to read it, all kinds of letters and numbers and symbols and things like that. What I can do is advise people to go to twitter.com/2600, and click on the link that shows up in the latest tweet there. I think that's really the only way to give that out without wasting a whole lot of time. And perhaps people can attend this and report to us at 8 o'clock during overtime. And let us know what's going on or how it's going, because we certainly would like to hear about that. To update people, Hotel Pennsylvania is slated for demolition. If you call them now, Pennsylvania 65000, 212-736-5000, you'll hear a recording saying they are permanently closed. And then, oddly enough, they have a link for human resources and various other things that you would think wouldn't be open if they were permanently closed. Hotel Pennsylvania has been our home for pretty much all the Hope conferences except one. We had already made plans to go elsewhere for the next Hope, which was supposed to have taken place in 2020. We know how that went. Despite that, we still want to save the building from being destroyed by greedy landlords and power brokers who want to build office towers that nobody will be in, as opposed to a huge hotel with thousands of rooms that travelers from all over the world could afford. It was a great gateway into New York City. It hurts the city to not have these travelers visiting us. And it's also a huge bit of history. Yes, Gila, go ahead.
I was confused for a minute, so I just wanted to clarify for people that this is not the meeting where public comment is invited. That is next Wednesday, 1 week from tonight. And conveniently, we are preempted. So you can attend the meeting about the plan, and you can potentially comment. All the information about that is at tinyurl.com/save the hotel.
Thank you for remembering that. Yes, because I got confused too. What do you know what time that particular meeting begins?
Give me one moment.
I'm sure it's 7 p.m.
At 5.
Oh, 5. Oh, okay. Well,
5 to 8.
I am corrected then. Not everything begins at 7 o'clock on Wednesdays, but most things do.
Yes, but this is good. So all the information for getting on that meeting is available, again, at tinyurl.com/save the hotel. And different to the webinar that's happening right now.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure next week they will be discussing Hotel Pennsylvania or anything of interest to us, but it's worth checking out anyway. This, obviously, the one's happening right now, the webinar, is talking about that. I'm not sure who's running it. I'm not sure how many people are there, but I'm advising WBAI listeners who are interested to check it out. Obviously, that means you have to tune away to do that, but you know, it's a sacrifice you might have to make. Again, the latest tweet at twitter.com/2600 will get you the link to get into that. It's going from now until 9 p.m. I don't know if you guys saw this story. It was kind of a wacky story that moved across our wire. Scientists warn that marketers are trying to inject ads into dreams. Now, I know that sounds completely crazy and bizarre, but so much of today's society is crazy and bizarre. So maybe it's not so fictitious as we might think. Researchers and sleep experts are ringing alarm bells. Not very nice if you're trying to sleep. About a new marketing tactic, injecting advertisements into your dreams. A trio of researchers at Harvard, MIT, and the University of Montreal have published an essay on dream hacking that, according to a recent survey, 77% of marketers plan to use dream tech advertising in the next 3 years. Okay, they got a cool word out of it, dream tech. That's neat. But what exactly is this? Multiple marketing studies are openly testing new ways to alter and drive purchasing behavior through sleep and dream hacking, the team writes. The commercial for-profit use of dream incubation, the presentation of stimuli before or during sleep to affect dream content, is rapidly becoming a reality. Two of the essay's authors previously worked on an MIT device designed to communicate with sleeping subjects and even hack their dreams, lending them credibility on the topic. Now, you know, if any of us have ever had a TV set on while we're falling asleep, have you ever noticed that sometimes what's on the TV somehow gets into your dreams and you start dreaming about things, or maybe you hear a newscast as you're waking up and you just concoct some bizarre set of circumstances that's your dream, but it's based on something that you're hearing in the background. I imagine that's what they're trying to develop. And I cannot believe that this is the direction that that people are openly moving in. And I don't want to use the word nightmare, but that's really what this would be. Do you guys agree?
Absolutely. I mean, sleep quality is something that is still not very well understood, the importance of sleep and the mechanism by which we sleep and dream and everything. There are whole fields of study dedicated to it, but it's agreed that it is important. It's important to your general health and well-being. And, you know, I like most of my dreams. Some of them are pretty nightmarish. I don't know if people want to be branding those particular ones, but yeah, this is pretty dystopian. I mean, tons of fiction has been written on the subject.
So there's a lot of fiction on the subject. I wasn't Inception kind mm-hmm. of about this. That yeah. was, what, 11 years ago now? Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, I think it's also interesting that as society has decided that we're going back to normal now, the pandemic is over and we're going back to normal and people can be back in the office all the time. And we're getting back to that culture of grind, 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 never sleep. And if you have to sleep, we're going to take advantage of the time that you're asleep to try to sell you things.
It's like you have your office that's always with you. You have your cell phone or your tablet, and you must always be on call. Well, now they figured out how to make you be on call even while you're asleep. Kyle?
There are places that have outlawed that practice with employees specifically, after-hours communications and so forth. But I really think that it is a domain where if there are techniques, there are technologies that allow this in a really easy way that can be directed in without any kind of consent or control from the person actually doing the dreaming, it does really it begs the question where is the private domain? And like we were saying here, there all of our time needs to be dominated by consumer driven interests and purchasing things. So like that would somehow be something we were consenting to collectively is a huge step. That's something like society would really want to know the ins and outs of, and instead of just letting these techniques be used with absolutely no interest from the consumer themselves, right?
You know, as a child, I've always had interesting dreams. Recently, I had a two-part dream, literally, where I woke up a little bit, and then I knew it was going to conclude after I went back to sleep, and it did. But as a child, I would dream about telephones. Yeah, big surprise. One of the dreams I had was that I was listening to a phone ringing, and in between the rings, there was an advertisement. And I even heard the guy's voice. It was the same guy that did a movie phone. And he was advertising things in between rings. Actually, it wasn't a movie phone because I wasn't a child when that was out. It was the guy that did sports phone or whatever, one of those dial-it services. And just the concept of having an advertisement in between rings. I think they've tried to pursue that, but it was long after I had that dream. So this has always been something that's been on my mind. And that's not necessarily hacking your dreams or getting into your dreams, but it's dreaming about ways that they can get to you in the most innocuous activities, just listening to a phone ring. From the story, though, a particular concern was an ad campaign by Molson Coors before this year's Super Bowl, which promised free beer in exchange for participation in a, quote, dream incubation study involving a video with dancing beer cans and talking fish and pop star Zahn Malik. The scientists pointed this out. Like Coors used the phrase targeted dream incubation, which was a term coined by two of those very three researchers in a 2020 paper, meaning that advertisers are indeed keeping an eye on academic work on dream hacking. You know what? We should just stop talking about this because they're listening to us and they might get ideas. Alex, do you want to help them or stop them?
I just want to let out a big sigh, really. I mean, I find the whole idea, the whole notion of this, the concept, just utterly abhorrent on so many levels. It's not enough that everywhere we walk, we see ads, we see billboards, we see signs, neon lights. Almost every inch of public space in New York has got some kind of advertising type media on it. You drive around the country and you see these country roads and the interstates all littered with billboards. There's really just no end to the lengths advertisers will go to try to get some kind of product, some kind of advertisement in front of our eyes. And now, even when our eyes are closed, they're going to be trying to do the same thing. The concept of it, I find, is just so intrusive and horrible on so many levels. But more importantly, and I think critically here, if you think about what's been happening, especially with social media platforms and misinformation, disinformation, election interference, all of these terrible things that have been happening, primarily through the use of targeted advertisements, targeted political ads, media, selected content on a lot of these platforms, I feel like, and I've said this many times before on the show, that we've all been part of this global experiment with our minds when it comes to these social media platforms. And advertisers and political candidates and political organizations have been playing with our minds and have been manipulating us through social media platforms for some time now, through
you know, ostensibly all of this targeted advertisements. And I think it's done I think it's had a massive amount of adverse effects on our personalities, on our ability to socialize with each other. And I think on our psychologies in general, especially when it comes to children. So the idea that we're going to now allow advertisers to venture into our subconscious and our REM states while we're sleeping just seems like a horribly bad idea.
Well, Alex, who owns your subconscious? I mean, you know, has this been tested in court?
Well, I don't know who owns it now. I mean, I think it's been transferred several times since I sold it.
Wow.
I think one of the really important things to remember about dreaming, though, is that it's your mind creating this, and I really don't think there should be external stimuli like while you're sleeping. I think also the many things we do see are a part of memory, and you do process it in a certain way, but the playfulness and the unique aspects of what your mind is doing during sleep is one of the best parts of dreaming. So why augment that? And that's, I think, another aspect of this.
It's money to be made.
Well, let's ruin dreams.
Go ahead, Rob.
Well, and dream hacking has been a thing, sort of a thing for a long time. There's the concept of lucid dreaming, which is something that a lot of people have a lot of fun with. And that is basically learning how to, while you're dreaming, recognize that you're dreaming and take control of it. And you can use that to, you know, work out whatever fantasies you want, or, you know, better understand your own mind, things you're dealing with, basically a self-care thing. There's entertainment value as well. But and there is so much written on that. There's all kinds of stuff online you can find if you look up lucid dreaming. You know, that is still, when it comes down to it, you're working on yourself. And it's not somebody else basically working on you in what really seems like a terrifying way.
Yeah, this is something that has been explored in science fiction as far back as I can remember. I know there was a Prisoner episode having to do with, affecting people's dreams. It's always been a fantasy, but it could turn into reality with the help of technology. But here's the thing, you know, whenever something like this happens, there's always something good that's tabled. And what they're saying is that dream incubation has practical uses, such as treating PTSD. But it's only a matter of time before tech companies that make watches, wearables, apps, other technology that monitor our sleep start to sell that data for profit, or use those tools to hack our dreams while we slumber. But worst of all, you probably won't remember it. You won't even remember it. The researchers referenced a study that found mixing bad smells with cigarette smoke while daily smokers slept reduced their smoking the next day, but they couldn't remember smelling anything. Yeah, so it's fascinating, I'll say that, but so many negative things are fascinating to study. There's no doubt about that. But yeah, that's a frightening study. Something to look out for in the future. Now, Rob, you posted something on our list over the past few days about some fired employees over at Google who are suing them because they are breaching the don't be evil part of their contract. As you might know, don't be evil was famously Google's motto for years. The company moved away from the motto after renaming itself Alphabet in 2015. But don't be evil is still part of the company's official employee code of conduct. Remember, don't be evil, and if you see something that you think isn't right, speak up. That's the final line of Google's code of conduct. Employees are expected to sign the contract as a condition of their employment at Google. Now, this new lawsuit, which alleges a breach of contract by Google, comes as part of drawn-out legal proceedings between Google and three former employees who were fired within minutes of each other on November 25th, 2019. Google claimed to fire the workers for leaking confidential information to the press and because they engage in systematic searches for information outside the scope of their job. But the software engineers said they were fired for protesting Google's decision to sell cloud computing software to Customs and Border Protection, which at the time was caging migrants and separating parents from children. They circulated a company-wide petition requesting Google affirm that it would not collaborate with Customs and Border Protection or ICE. The three workers, Rebecca Rivers, Paul Duke, and Sophie Waldman, are now suing Google for allegedly violating its own code of conduct as well as California public policy. It's an interesting story. Do you have any thoughts on this, Rob?
I have a lot of thoughts. I mean, it's fascinating that this may well end up, if it goes to court and everything, this may well end up being a case in which they have to decide on the legal books whether something is or isn't evil, and whether Google broke their own rule about this. I also want to mention really quick that this story, I found this on Vice, which itself is having its own sort of issues coming to terms with their own organized workforce. If you go to Vice Union on Twitter, you can keep up with everything that they're going through. It's important to look at that. But yeah, I mean, don't be evil. It was one of those things in the early days of Google. It was still that early startup phase, and it felt like something that was really sort of feel good. And, over the years, as things got less and less human in their sort of corporate structure thing, a lot of people would say they've kind of lost sight of it. And these are people that were whistleblowing something they felt was evil, which is Google basically hooking up with defense and making tools that would be eventually used to kill people, which, you could say that's evil, I think. I certainly feel like it is.
Yeah, if your slogan is don't be evil and you get rid of that slogan, doesn't some alarm bell ring in your head saying, wait a minute, this isn't a good move. It's certainly not a good look. But basically what happened was in 2018, Google backtracked on its don't be evil motto. I mean, you should never backtrack on don't be evil. I just don't get the thinking. But it quietly moved don't be evil to the very end of the code of conduct. And I want to read this part. This was a section that was deleted. Don't be evil. Googlers generally apply those words to how we serve our users. But don't be evil is much more than that. Yes, it's about providing our users unbiased access to information, focused on their needs, and giving them the best products and services we can. But it's also about doing the right thing more generally, following the law, acting honorably, and treating each other with respect. The Google Code of Conduct is one of the ways we put don't be evil into practice. It's built around the recognition that everything we do in connection with our work at Google will be and should be measured against the highest possible standards of ethical business conduct. They deleted all that. According to Vice, they deleted all of that from their code of conduct. And I have to wonder why and what are they thinking and what is the future slogan of Google going to be?
What is it now? Do we know?
I don't know if they have an official slogan. Did they change it to something or like try to be nice?
Increase shareholder value.
I don't know if they actually put a new, it's not in the story. But don't be evil. Apparently they're moving away from that.
I could see the allure of working for the defense contract specifically being something they wrap in a sort of national pride they're executing this business decision, and then the follow-on effect of their workforce having to grapple with that decision that might not recognize what it really means for humanity instead of just that business decision.
Yeah, it's go ahead, Rob.
I'm just curious, Alex, like as a law talking dude, what are your feelings on whether like something like Don't Be Evil could hold up in court?
Well, with the caveat, of course, that I'm not much of a labor and employment law lawyer. But that being said, this is a really fascinating case because it seems to be some kind of standard that's included within an employee handbook. But on the other hand, it's hardly a legal standard or something that can be objectively defined. You know, what is it to be evil? One man's evil is another man's goodness, I guess. You know, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter, right? So it's a very tricky standard. I think that the court will have substantial difficulty holding a company to account to. But more to the point, though, I see this lawsuit as much more of about the publicity that the employees are trying to bring to the practices of Google and what they're trying to bring to light rather than actually having merits on its own. I would be really surprised if the lawsuits survived a motion to dismiss, because it's, again, a very amorphous standard to be able to claim that Google has to adhere to something like that. So, I think we should watch it. I think it'll be fun. And I'm really curious about what the pleadings are going to look like in this case.
Gila, go ahead.
Do the right thing.
What, that's their slogan now?
Yeah, apparently when the reorganization happened and Alphabet became a concern, their motto and beginning of the Alphabet Code of Conduct became do the right thing.
What did Spike Lee have to say about that? I know he sued the Spike Channel, so I imagine he's going to come after Google.
But the other thing Alphabet. That fascinates me about it is the imperative of don't be evil versus do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, what you're told to do versus what you're told not to do is very interesting. And I'm looking at it from like a sort of a linguistic point of view. And, you know, the right thing is subjective.
Of course. But so is don't be evil.
I'm very curious about it. And also because like people could argue that some of the things are evil, but you could find people who argue on either side that whatever it is the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be the right thing by shareholders to do something that makes a lot of money.
Exactly. Like,
but even in these days, evil can be subjective as well. We think of it as an absolute, but look at the people around. Look at the what we face every day, and there are people who are actively cheering for things that are evil and thinking that they're good. Now, I just wonder, with that slogan, do the right thing, which one is closer to the ultimate slogan of follow orders? Because I think that's where they're heading.
Mm-hmm.
Alex, did you have something else?
No, I'm good on this story. I think we can move on.
Okay, let's do that then. We have a letter from a listener from the discussion that we had last week about OBD2 systems and interfaces. They said the discussion was very timely. I'd installed and used an OBD2 interface for the first time only hours before listening to the episode. That's pretty good timing. In answer to the question about how feasible it is for a layperson to use one of these devices, I can report that it is indeed very feasible. I was able to connect the interface device to the onboard system, connect it to my phone via Bluetooth, read an error code, and find out what the code meant by way of a link generated by the app in less than 15 minutes. That's including a few minutes of futzing around with Bluetooth connectivity issues, which have become a real thorn in my side, but that's the subject of a different email. I hear that. The OBD2 interface device I purchased was about $20, and the Android app, known as Torque, which communicates with it, cost $5. I would recommend this process to anyone who's looking to learn more about how their vehicle works, do their own maintenance, or avoid getting ripped off by walking into the mechanic/dealership, etc., armed with some knowledge of what's actually wrong with their vehicle. Thank you, PRD, for that amazing letter, which basically outlines what so many of us are interested in. Alex?
Yeah, I think I should take the prize. I think it was I who brought up the ODB2 port last week, so I don't know if I get some kind of prize in the mail. I'll give you my mailing address after the show, Emmanuel, but I'll be expecting some kind of sapphire or diamond ring.
Oh, you're going to get something. Yeah, it's on the way already.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah, all right. Yeah. So fantastic. But I think that the listeners is absolutely right, and his letter is right on point. It goes to exactly what we were talking about last week, which is, you know, it's kind of fun, too, to connect these devices into your ODB2 port in your car, diagnose what's going on without having to go to the mechanic. And I think it had direct relevance to what was going on at McDonald's with these crazy teller machine diagnostic systems that have become such a proprietary mess and nightmare. And so, you know, this is all part and parcel of, I think, the hacker mentality when it comes to sharing information, being able to diagnose and fix your own machines yourself.
And that's really all we want, right, Kyle? We all just want to be able to fix our own cars and our own machines. Just have access.
Yeah, and eliminate waste, maybe learn something along the way, and add some life, you know, some reusability, support repair, you know, people that that repair all kinds of older things and help keep them out of the waste cycle. That's an entire cadre of different kinds of businesses for all types of machinery and modern equipment that we run into. And as the types of materials and things they're made out of change, we have to sort of change the way we the way we allow and moderate sort of access and availability of tools.
You're listening to Off the Hook here on WBAI. We encourage people to support WBAI so that we can stay on the air. Go to give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. And pledge whatever you can. Become a BAI buddy and pledge a certain amount every month. That turns into a big amount at the end of the year, which is great for us and great for you, too, because programs like Off the Hook and so many others will keep coming your way. You can also call 212-209-2950 and pledge in person or go to the website. We're going to spend the rest of the show talking about things in Asia. Yeah, why not? How about this? Hackers are peeping into apartments in Korea, South Korea, that is. A media report stating that smart controlling systems installed in newly built apartments are vulnerable to hacking. It's triggering concern that footage of residents' private lives could be stolen and sold to shady online business operators, including porn sites. Yeah, IT Chosen, which is a news outlet specializing in IT, recently reported that video recordings of ordinary households in Korea are being sold on the dark web, which are web pages not indexed by search engines, and that have hidden IP addresses. The hacker it contacted, I'm going to put hacker in quotes there, if you don't mind. The hacker it contacted claimed that they had hacked most intercom systems with cameras in Korea's apartments and that the footage had been extracted and sold. The hacker presented thumbnails as evidence, including shots of naked people in their homes. The hacker requested 0.1 Bitcoin, or a Bitcoin worth around 8 million won, for the video footage from one day in someone's home, according to the news outlet. The systems installed at apartments first started as intercoms, but now enable controlling various home devices, such as lighting and heating. And some new models even include cameras, which appear to be open to hacking to capture video footage. If a hacker succeeds in breaching the security of one home, they can also access footage of neighboring apartments connected through the building's network. The news outlet reported that the hacker sent a list of hundreds of apartment buildings they have access to obtain video footage of people's private lives around the country. You know, I am astounded by this. What kind of a system would anybody want where there's a camera focused on you from the outside world under any circumstance? I'm trying to think of it. You know, if you have, first of all, what's wrong with just buzzing somebody in? You know, Rob Gila, I hear your buzzer often enough that I know that's the system you have, and it works, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody's downstairs, you know, maybe you talk to them, maybe you say, who are you? But you don't need to see them, and they certainly don't need to see you. So who is it that says, yeah, that's a good idea. I want an image of me to be transmitted to somebody outside. And then it's only a matter of time before somebody figures out how to do that without your permission. And then all of a sudden you've got your private life being displayed to everybody in yet another avoidable way.
Too many features. I think we're just this overwhelming abundance of components for some of the systems that are being built into different complexes, and of course very large complexes. You have to manage a much larger amount of data and connectivity that tends to you look for shortcuts. There's ways to eliminate overhead. There's always aspects of it that might not get as much attention because you're trying to scale it up so much, but then you end up with these huge breaches because everything is the same and it's
right.
centrally stored. So that scale, I guess, or the massiveness of urban centers that this stuff is installed in, I think becomes its own vulnerability. Maybe?
Well, it's basically a lot of the consumers, the residents of apartments, they don't have a choice because it comes with the building. So they're forced to use this bad technology. That's a really stupid idea, and they're the victims in the end. So if you see something like that, if it's being forced upon you, tell somebody, tell us or tell a newspaper or a TV station or somebody to get the word out and stop this nonsense. Otherwise, yeah, your images could be all over the dark web and all over all sorts of places. Don't blame hackers, though. Hackers are the ones that will tell you how to stop it and reveal it in the first place. Yes, Alex?
I find this whole thing mystifying as well. I don't understand, in what galaxy this somebody thought this was a good idea. It's very strange and bizarre to me. I will say, though, in my apartment in New York, we have a buzzing system, whereby we have a camera focused on the outside, at the door, so you can see who's out there, and then you buzz them in. But you can also talk through this intercom system. But what's kind of interesting, what I realized, is that the intercom system, it's a completely open circuit, so that if you pick it up, you can hear what's going on outside.
Right.
So long as you pick up the phone, you can always hear what's going on outside. And regardless of whether or not somebody buzzes you, whatever you say through that phone will then be broadcast out to the street.
Right.
So when there's people passing by, you can say something like, "Hey, yo, watch out, come here," and they'll turn around and you can see them in the camera. If you're really bored at night, pre-pandemic, when there are actually a lot of people walking down my street, it was something fun to do. I mean, you could, just mess with any passerby.
Well, you can do that with Ring.
That's fun, but it's a one-way system.
You can do that with Ring. You see all the TV commercials for somebody who's coming up to your door and you're three states away. You're able to talk to them and get them to run away, and that's considered a good thing. It probably is a good thing, but it's bad when it's reversed. Generally, if you have a camera. if you have a camera on your end. If you do, cover it up. There's no law requiring you to use your camera, at least not in democratic countries.
I just hope they put more of that, more resource and design emphasis into reliability and durability instead of just more flashy, whiz-bang stuff that will sell. Like, maybe that's alluring to the consumer. Maybe that'll, they're maybe not security minded or thinking necessarily how this might impact them once they live there. But if it's needless, it doesn't help the feature. Like you said, right. It just could be a simple intercom with a buzz and unlocking mechanism.
Old technology. Oftentimes, old technology is all you need. You don't need to improve something. Your refrigerator doesn't need Wi-Fi. It's all sorts of things. I could go on for...
That's what I mean by abundance. Mm-hmm. We just have too much of the stuff that isn't really making these products last.
Abundance of uselessness, yes. That's what we're at. On to the Philippines. The website of Senator Bongo was hacked on the same day the senator announced his withdrawal from the presidential race. Pinoy Gray Hats, which is a Filipino cybersecurity group, informed MB Tech News that a team member found a severe vulnerability on the senator's website. After a few hours, there was an update that personally identifiable information of volunteers for Go's presidential bid could be exposed and that the site was defaced. Pinoy Gray Hats, however, claimed that the hack was not a targeted attack. The site appeared to have multiple vulnerabilities in the automated passive scanning performed by the group. After finding the security vulnerabilities, the group then exploited the misconfigurations in the website, conducted SQL injection attacks, and installed a backdoor to have complete control of the site. Now, a member of the group also informed MB Tech News that they have no plans of exfiltrating the site's contents. They even put measures to secure the server and its contents from other hackers who might try to download the sensitive information. What do you think about that? We fixed the broken access control issue that allows any user to bypass and access endpoints even without proper authorization, a member of Pinoy Gray Hats told MB Tech News. While we did not specifically target Senator Bongo, we believe that he is the right person to listen to our concern once we show him that we are doing this for good. We hope that as we show the good senator the dangers of the vulnerable site in exposing personal and sensitive data, the government would support cybersecurity professionals by pushing vulnerability disclosure programs for government websites and servers. Yeah, that's how you do it. That's how you do it. That's what hackers are all about. Going out there, finding a vulnerability, publicizing it, maybe embarrassing somebody, but ultimately doing good and making things better. Am I wrong?
No, that's something I remember fondly from like the heyday of the early web and people's sites getting defaced. But like the people who got in there playfully fixing the errors that let them in and like writing, "This is how I got in. Hey, guy, fix your thing." And somewhere on the page. And it was all in fun. And, you know, but also, yeah, it's an interesting way to get a message across.
Okay, over to Malaysia now. A construction site supervisor's mobile phone was hacked after he tried to apply for a personal loan. Mohamed Zakaria Mohamed Sebli said he saw a money lending advertisement about 2 weeks ago and contacted the number listed. One of my workers needed to take a loan, so I tried to help him get a... does anybody know the currency of Malaysia? Gila, it looks like you perked up there. No,
It's somewhere.
Well, the initial is RM, which is kind of cool. A 300 RM loan. It's known as the Malaysian Ringgit, which is also kind of a cool name. You ring it like you ring a phone. 300 Ringgit loan is what he was trying to get. When I called the number, the person on the other end of the line told me to download an app called Easy Do It to apply for the loan. That's Do It spelled with a U. I followed the instructions, and he told me the loan had been approved, but only for 150 ringgits. He said he rejected the loan and told him to cancel it and assumed that was the end of it. Then I started to receive phone calls demanding money, even though I never took a sen from them. Now, I should probably point out at this point, sen is the 100 units that are in a ringgit. It's spelled S-E-N. Later on, I received calls from my friends telling me that they have received messages claiming that I had a loan that I had not settled and that my MyCAD and intimate photographs of me with my fiancé were also attached. I don't know what MyCAD is. M-Y-K-A-D. Anybody know? No? Okay, we'll find out, I'm sure. I suspect that the syndicate hacked into my phone. Oh, boy.
Not them.
That is the only way it could have accessed my contacts and photos, he said, adding that he lodged a police report on the matter. He called the cops and the syndicate. Oh, boy, that's going to be a problem. Meanwhile, Samantha Chin claimed she lost 4,255 ringgits after her phone was hacked while she was trying to book a cleaning service. I found the service online on November 17th. And contacted the number via WhatsApp and was sent a link to download an app in order to make an appointment. I was instructed to pay a 20 ringgit deposit, and I tried to make payment by keying in my banking username and password. Big mistake. The screen went blank, so I attempted to use a different bank to do so, and the same thing occurred. Adding the next day, she found an unauthorized money transfer of 3,655 ringgits and 40 sen. Was made through one of her banking accounts. She said when she checked the other bank account, she found 600 ringgits had been transferred. I lodged a police report that same day as I suspect someone had hacked into my phone when I downloaded that app. Meanwhile, Department Head Datuk Seri Michael Chong said he had received six such complaints this year. If you are unsure of the application, do not download it into your phone, he advises, because you could give full control to a hacker. Okay, well, Datuk Seri Michael Chong, I would just say, please don't call them hackers. These are criminals. These are thieves. These are people that take advantage of others and steal money. Not what hacking is about.
Well, for anyone curious, one Malaysian ringgit right now is worth 24 U.S. cents. So they're very roughly four ringgits to the dollar.
Roughly. Also, looked it up, and a MyCAD is the Malaysian citizenship card, if I could quote from Wikipedia. Besides the main purpose of the card as a validation tool and proof of citizenship other than the birth certificate, MyCAD may also serve as a valid driver's license, an ATM card, an electronic purse, and a public key, among other applications, as part of the Malaysian government multipurpose card initiative, if the bearer chooses to activate the functions.
Interesting. Thank you, Gila, for that helpful information.
My pleasure.
Learning so much. Let's go over to Thailand now. A Thai rapper has vowed not to be silenced. What rapper is ever going to take a vow to be silenced. Seriously. A Thai rapper has vowed not to be silenced after he and at least five other government critics received messages from Apple warning them that state-sponsored hackers could be targeting their phones. It's kind of bizarre. Apple sent a warning to this rapper in Thailand saying that some state-sponsored hacker or hackers are targeting them. The U.S. tech giant warned the Thai activist that if successful, the hackers could remotely access their data and even the camera and microphone on their iPhones. Now, these warnings came as Apple filed a lawsuit against NSO Group. We've reported on them in the past. The Israeli spyware maker at the center of the Pegasus surveillance scandal. They're seeking to block them from targeting iPhones. Decathorn, quote, Hawk Hacker is his nickname. Bang Rungmang. You know, Thai names are awesome. Every single one of them is unique. We have to study this someday, but just look up Thai names. They're always different and very long, and I can never remember any of them. The Chathorn Bam Rungmang from the Rap Against Dictatorship group posted a screen grab of the message to his Facebook page. Apple believes you are being targeted by state-sponsored attackers who are trying to remotely compromise the iPhone associated with your Apple ID, the message warned. These attackers are likely targeting you individually because of who you are or what you do. You know, getting a message like that from Apple is a real badge of honor, I think, certainly holds true here. The Chathorn, who had previously been arrested for sedition but was later released, said he was appalled by the hacking attempt. We, meaning Rap Against Dictatorship, will probably write a song about this. I would expect nothing less. I want to hear that song. I want to learn Thai so I can hear that song. Yes, Gila.
Do we know these emails were actually from Apple? Because this just sounds like a really intense fish.
Well, you know, it could be, but Apple does send out these messages from what I understand. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, I bet it was a legitimate email, Gila. Apple is known to send these messages. So is Google. So is Yahoo. I have several friends that have received such messages in the past with respect to their Yahoo accounts. One of them is a human rights lawyer that works with the United Nations, and he's gotten several of these messages in the past. And I think it's really quite interesting and good of these platforms and services to be tracking this type of APT or advanced persistent threat telemetry and letting users know about this, you know, as well as certain security precautions that they should be taking. Things like activating two-factor authentication, which more crafty state actors and generally bad threat actors are figuring out ways to get around. So this is all, I think, well and good for them to be sending these out, and I'm looking forward to that song.
Rap Against Dictatorship took a high-profile role in the youth-led protest that shook Bangkok last year, demanding the resignation of Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha, who came to power in a 2014 coup. Asked about the messages from Apple, Anicha Burapach, I love reading these names, Anicha Burapachasri, who is Deputy Secretary General to the Prime Minister, said, if it is authentic, the Digital Economy and Social Ministry will look into this. Boy, that sounds ominous. Writer Sarani Achavanutakul, Thammasat University political scientist Prajat Kankarati, filmmaker Ilya Fofi, who I suspect is not Thai, and Ying Cheap at Chanant, who works for a human rights law firm, all shared the same warnings on their social media page. The sixth target was believed to be a human rights lawyer, while local media reported that a further two activists and academics had been affected. Well, to close out, and as thanks to the people who battle this kind of crap all the time, I'd like to play a song from Rap Against Dictatorship, and I'm told by Amazon that it is not it's a clean song. We're going to go out with that. We will rejoin you on youtube.com/channel2600. I know, Rob, you have something to say about meetings this week. Make it quick.
Yes, indeed. We have 2600 meetings going on this week, this Friday, 2600.com/meetings, but also the local meeting, the New York City meeting. We're going back to Citigroup this week. Wow. They've remodeled the interior. We're taking the meeting back to where they originated. So Citigroup building, 53rd and Lexington, this Friday evening.
First time in many years that we have been at the Citigroup building. Okay, look forward to a report on that. Again, we're not on next week. We'll be on in 2 weeks, but we are on in a few minutes on channel 2600 on YouTube.com. You can follow the link on the main 2600.com webpage. And we will see you then. Here is a piece from Thailand, Rap Against Dictatorship. Good night.
ไอ้โย่คุณรู้ไหมครับว่าอักษรไทย44ตัวมีอะไรบ้างเดี๋ยวพวกผมจะท่องทั้งหมดให้ฟังมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนพ่อเอ๋ยกอกราบมอบราบร้องเองขอบัตรเขย่งเป็นคะแนนที่ไม่มีขอขวดเบียร์เศรษฐีแต่ไม่มีเบียร์ครับขอครอบงำกดให้ย่ำอยู่ที่เดิมขอคนเลิกใช้เพราะไม่เคยจะเท่ากันขอโฆษณาชวนเชื่อแบ่งแยกเยื่อเกลียดอีกฝั่งมองงบประมาณแบ่งเงินชาติไปให้ใครจอจับช่วงอย่าก้าวล่วงสิ่งศักดิ์สิทธิ์ชอช็อตคือเสียงด่ารัฐบาลทั้งปีชอช้างนั่นคือตัวที่เขาปัดว่าไม่มีซอ CIA ม็อบที่ไหนไปทุกทีชอเพชรชักขาดใครกล้ามาสิ้นชีวิตมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนย่อบุญญาล้างอาญาให้หมดจดดอดีกาตาช่างเอียงหน้ารันทดตอคือกบฏผู้ฉีกกฎล้มกระดานถอฐานันดร4คือสื่อที่ต้องทำงานทอเกณฑ์ทหารคือหลักฐานของมูลนายทอพัฒนาแสนจะช้าน่าสงสัยนอบูรณาการถ่ายเอกสารเซ็นสำเนาดอคือ DE คอยบล็อกเพจตามเป็นเงาตอตำรวจเรื่องใหญ่ออกบอกไม่เจอทอแถลงไม่ขึ้นฟังละมึนใช่หรอทอเท่าเทียมที่ไทยแลนด์เหลื่อมล้ำแรงทอธรรมนัตมองให้ชัดมันคือแป้งมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวนยังไม่หมดนอนาฬิกาแพงให้เพื่อนยืมจนวายชนบอบกเหมือนบังเกอร์คอนเทนเนอร์ขยันขนปอประชารัฐคือชื่อพรรคคนดีพอผีคอมมิวนิสต์แปลผิดให้มันดูน่ากลัวฟอคือฝากขังยังไม่ผิดติดโรคฟรีพอเพนกวินกล้าหาญสุภเดชการสันติวิธีฟอคือฟุ่มเฟือยที่หาประโยชน์ไม่มีพอพักดีห้ามพักผ่อนอย่าใส่เสื้อผิดสีมอมิเนียนล้นแข่งขันแต่บังคับกันมาย่อยกเว้นเพื่อนไม่ผิดพร้อมจะปิดตำรารอราษฎรล้วนมีความคิดใช่หุ่นฟางรอคือล้มล้างหรือโครงสร้างที่ผุพังมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนสุดท้ายแล้วสุดท้ายแล้วสัญญาสัญญาวอวุฒิสภาแต่งตั้งปกป้องจำนั่งยกมือสอศิลปะคือเสรีภาพยิ่งปราบยิ่งโตสอคือภาษีประเทศกูมีใช้ไม่คุ้มค่าสอสมานฉันท์มาจับมือกันแบบจำยอมขอโหนให้ลงต่ำยิ่งตอกย้ำซ้ำหมัวหมองรอมหาการคือสนามหญ้าที่เป็นลือชุมชนอไอโอปลุกปั่นเขารู้ทันกันทุกคนพอฮาเร็มคือคุมพลังของเทวดาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวน
เป็นขบวน
เป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวน
เป็นขบวน
เป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวน
เป็นขบวน
เป็นขบวนมาเป็นขบวนเป็นขบวน
This is Ralph Pointer.
Hi, I'm J.W. Walker, one of the founding members of Ace.
This is Ralph Pointer.
Join me and others every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial. It would appear the human movement is such that at any moment in history, there are too few that understand possibilities of existence that would benefit all who inhabit this planet and are willing to act on this understanding. This program will feature that few. What are your views on these issues that impact your life today? What are your views on America today? What are your views on America's future? Can we talk? Call in 212-209-2877. Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial.
Hi, I'm J.W. Walker, one of the founding members of Gays Against Guns. In light of the verdict in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial in Kenosha, Wisconsin, Gays Against Guns has put out the following statement. Although, given the composition of the jury and the judge's bizarre and clearly biased behavior throughout the trial, this verdict was unsurprising. We are still disgusted that this hooligan was just let off after murdering two people and maiming a third. Everything about this case demonstrates how broad and deep the connections between gun culture, white supremacy, and our criminal justice system are. The decision has guaranteed that more of these violent sociopathic incels will decide to go shoot protesters demonstrating against white supremacy. The quote-unquote coming race war that white supremacist agitators have been foretelling for decades and doing everything within their power to bring to fruition for just as long seems nearer to becoming an actual possibility. And that is a frightening prospect. Protests against these sorts of injustices will become less safe, but we shall not stop publicly demonstrating against gun culture and white supremacy, because we must, because this jury's decision makes it all the more imperative that we do. Please tune in to Radio Gag every Tuesday at 2:30 p.m. for more discussions on issues like the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict and other issues related to gun violence prevention in the United States.
Greetings and salutations. This is Giovanni Anglin.
And I'm Bastian Nissa. Along with intern Mike, you can catch us live on Thursday from midnight to 2 a.m.
You know what, Bash? Our tagline is that this is the show about nothing, but it's more than that, right?
That's true. Our conversations could be political, but also comical. We're really just giving our point of view on how we see the world and how it affects us today.
So join us Thursdays at midnight, BAI listeners, only on 99.5 FM WBAI New York.
And that is where your dial is set, WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. And we welcome now Ralph Pointer with a brand new show, What's Happening? Stay tuned.
Round world to hear. I wish could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart. I wish you could know what it means to be me. Then you'd see and agree that every man should be free.
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. This is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, or just plain What's Happening. And thank you for tuning in this evening. We have much to talk about. And it would appear the human movement is such that at any moment in history, there are too few who understand possibilities of existence that would benefit all who would inhabit this planet. And who are willing to act on this and understanding. That's what I believe. And this evening, for all of our benefit, we have one of the few people, we're going to talk about one of the few people who understood what was going on and did something about it, and that was Fred Hampton Sr., who was assassinated some 52 odd years ago. And this week, all over the country, we will be celebrating that reality. And our guest this evening is Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., the son of Fred Hampton. And this evening, I remember talking or introducing our queen. People in various countries have kings and queens. We, too, have a king and a queen. The king is Fred Hampton Sr., and what happened was the government felt that his ability to organize was so fantastic that they felt that they had to assassinate him. And so that gives us a clue as to how important organizing is. If we can organize the people to understand the truth, and I think it was Emerson who said, the truth cannot be told as to be understood and not be believed. And Chairman Fred Hampton Sr. had that truth, and he was able to organize. He was on his way to organizing the people. And that is what we are attempting to do. Organize the people and bring them the truth. And so his wife, the Queen, Mother Comrade, and his son, Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., is the Prince of Liberty. And he's the chairman of the Prisoners of Conscience Committee and the Black Panther Party Cubs. And so Chairman Fred Hampton, A few weeks ago, I was interviewing Daoud Andre of Komokoto on the issue of Haiti. And while I was interviewing him, I was doing a background information or giving background information on Haiti, and he corrected me twice. And so, as not to be corrected twice, I'm going to go right to our guest, Fred Hampton, Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. What's happening?
Is it possible to give me five minutes?
You're on the air. Chairman Fred Hampton Jr.
Yes.
What's happening
right now? I don't know.
I'm bringing my technical difficulties with me. Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., what's happening?
I'm trying to bring the whole world together.
I'll make another announcement. We have Sister Nellie Bailey, who has taken on the responsibility of co-hosting the program on 15 minutes' notice. Sister Nellie Bailey, are you in the house? Yes, well, while we do this, as I say, I bring the situation of technical difficulties with me. And we have much to say, and I'd like to know what you're thinking of the problems that we have, the problems on the local level, the problems on the state level, and the problems on the international and national level. And when we just have this discussion this evening, we are going to discuss together. You call in and tell me what you're thinking, and we try to have a decent answer for you. That being said, is it possible that we could open up the phones to those on the line?
Hello.
Nellie Bailey, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Sister
Thank
Nellie
you,
Bailey,
Ralph.
Are you there?
Yes, I am. I think I need to turn down the volume. Yes, I am here.
Sister Nellie Bailey, are you there?
Yes.
Thank you.
I am here.
Thank you.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear, and I want to thank you so much for taking this assignment on, I guess it was closer to 15 minutes notice, because we were expecting Earl Maitland to co-host, but I haven't been able to get in touch with him in the last 2 days. But Sister Nellie Bailey, we're waiting for Chairman Fred to get on, and we still do not have Chairman Fred. And so maybe we'll open up to call-ins on what people would like to discuss. Before Chairman Fred came on, he's very busy on his 52nd anniversary of his father's murder, and his mother was pregnant while his father was being murdered. She too was injured in the assault, and there are stories that I would like Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. to tell, if we can get him on the line. But I do understand he's busy. And Nellie, would you like to fill in here for a few minutes while we're waiting for Chairman Fred to come on?
Yes, and thank you, Ralph. I'm happy to co-host with you. I think I would like to start off, and this is a general context for all of our concerns, and that is the economic crisis in the country. We have an explosion that is almost assured with the fact that 30 to 40 million households in the U.S. are at risk of eviction. That is a staggering sum And perhaps for some, it may not be that case because it is less than 10% of the population. However,